This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show from Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist. Here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All righty, we'll get the show underway in a moment, but Kyle Bailey has a news update.
Yeah, we do. We've got a big traffic accident on Garden Valley causing a severe backup, really, across town right now. It appears to be westbound in the area of Fred Meyer, but right now it's taking westbound motorists on Garden Valley 20 minutes to get from Stevens to the area of Fred Meyer. Severe backup. Looks like the eastbound traffic not really impacted, but westbound traffic, big backup there. Accident around Fred Meyer. Looks like a lane is blocked right now. And if you're trying to get that direction from over on Stevens or on the eastern side of town, might want to head over to Harvard, work your way around differently. That's a look at traffic. Kyle Bailey, News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right. Thank you, Kyle. And good afternoon, Mike.
Well, good afternoon. And we are on the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show this afternoon. I have a special guest that wanted to speak with me on my show. Lance, are you there?
I'm good, Mike. All right. I'm here.
Good. Well, I don't know how this all came about, but I got a phone call out of the blue one day from Rob, and he said that you'd like to be on my show. And so I quizzed him and asked him for a resume of yours, and your resume is very impressive. And I thought, why in the world would he want to come to the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show? So you're on, buddy. What do you have to say? And you can be on here as long as you want.
Yes.
Well, that's great. I'm hoping that we can have a great little discussion. The reason I wanted to be on was we're just talking about lawn care. I am the spokesperson for BioAdvanced, and so we are doing a lot of talking to people about some of our new products. But basically, I'm just talking about lawn care and, you know, the things you need to do to have a great-looking lawn.
Well, I do that quite frequently myself, so we'll see if any of our conversation might be along the similar path.
Right. Well, you know, as you know, then, you know, having a great-looking lawn is not about doing one thing right. It's about doing several things right. You know, and if somebody's starting a new lawn, I like to recommend they do a soil test, you know, that they can really find out what's going on in the soil, and it gives them an opportunity to correct any problems with pH and things like that. But then it's also about mowing. Mowing at the proper height is very important, and keeping in mind as the summer months are coming that the taller grass is going to give you deeper roots and more drought tolerance, and it's also going to help, you know, shade out the weeds. So making sure that you have sharp blades on your lawnmower. A lot of people don't do that, but if, you know, if you're cutting your lawn out there and a day or two later it starts to have that little gray look to it, you might take a close look at the top of those blades and see if they're not ragged. That's caused by a dull blade, so I always like to start the season with a sharp blade. You know, not that expensive. You can sharpen yourself if you're handy, but it's important for the best looking lawn.
One thing I might add to your conversation here, I find that a lot of folks mow their lawns way too short in the summer, and consequently, they wonder why they brown up, and they wonder why their lawn isn't green, and they wonder why the weed population seems to be coming back. And so I always give them advice, like you just said, sharp blades, mow your grass a little bit higher, retain the greenness in that lawn, and fertilize it on a regular basis, and you will have a green lawn that's pretty much weed-free, but not totally.
Right. You know, and that's, you know, you do all these things, and it really helps because weeds are advantageous plants. They're going to get into your lawn if you're not doing something right to have a vigorous, you know, fast-growing lawn. So, you know, and I also recommend that people leave the clippings. If they have a mulching mower, that's perfectly, that works perfect, cuts and recuts the grass. But, you know, we don't want to put all the clippings in the, you know, the dumps and places like that. And it also adds nitrogen to the soil and organic matter to the soil. And, you know, I can't also, whenever I talk about mowing, I have to talk about safety. You know, keep the kids away from the lawnmower. Make sure there's no debris on the lawn. I saw some statistics the other day that said that 9,400 children are injured every year in lawnmower accidents.
Jeez.
So keep the kids away and keep them safe. And you mentioned fertilizing, and that's really important. I like to fertilize in the spring once and in the fall for cool season grasses. And I like to use a fertilizer that has at least some slow-release fertilizer in it so that you get that sustained
right.
growth. You know, if you're out there just fertilizing with a really fast-acting fertilizer, like a, I don't know, a 16, 16, 16, something like that,
mm-hmm.
you're going to get a real burst of growth where you're going to be out there mowing every other day, and then it's going to slow down. So if you use a little bit of slow-release fertilizer, you're going to get that more sustained greening and that sustained growth, and so that's really important.
You know, Lilly Miller products used to have a great lawn food, and it was a slow release, perfect formulation of nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, and it worked well. And I used it for, oh gosh, 20 some odd years, and then all of a sudden they stopped making it. They went off mm-hmm. the market, and now they got these new ones, and I'm thinking, what do I do now? And I have to experiment more.
Yeah, yeah, and the bioadvanced products that we have do have a large portion of slow-release fertilizer in them, so that can give you that sustained growth. And then, you know, I think if people make one mistake more than any other, it has to do with the proper watering.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm in California right now, and, of course, we're in a severe drought, and water conservation is important, you know, wherever you are, so you want to make sure you're not overwatering. Not only because you're wasting a valuable resource, but also it's not good for the lawn. And, of course, I'm not sure how it is up there. If you're looking at any kind of a watering restrictions or watering days or things like that, but it's important to know those if they come up. The goal really is to water deeply but infrequently and to get that water down to about 6 to 8 inches deep. For most lawns, 1 to 1.5 inches a week is enough, usually broken up into two applications. There is no reason to water a lawn every day for short periods. that's going to give you shallow-rooted lawn that's not going to be able to stand up to any drought conditions. So you want to make sure you're also changing, you know, how long you're watering with the seasons. But, you know, the question is, okay, if a lawn needs an inch to an inch and a half of water a week, how do you know how much you're applying? And really, the only way to figure that out is to do what I call a sprinkler audit. And basically, that means you take five straight-sided coffee cups or whatever you've got around, and you turn your sprinklers on for 15 minutes, and then you go out and measure how much water is accumulated in those cups. And that's going to tell you how fast you're applying water. And then you'll know how long you have to run your sprinklers to get the type of water that the lawn's going to need. And then you're also going to find out that some of those cans may have more or less water than others, and you'll notice that those are the areas of the lawn that are probably drying out quicker than others. You know, and a good way to also double-check is to go out with a screwdriver, get on your hands and knees, and probe the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And what you'll find is that in moist soil, screwdriver will move easily, and it'll stop when it gets to dry soil. And so if you're aiming for that 6 to 8 inches, you can really see how deep the water is going.
You know, Lance, one of the frequent questions that I get, either at my nursery or on the air, is I've been watering my lawn every day, and it's still browning up. And my first question is, how long are you watering it every day, and what time of the day are you watering? And they say, oh, we give it 10 minutes in the morning or in the afternoon. I said, well, you're wasting water. About 50% of it on a hot day is being evaporated right into the atmosphere. It's not even getting into the grass. and I said the same recommendation that you did. Twice a week, usually, in the hottest part of the summer, maybe three times, but at least a half an hour shot and see so that that water can get down into the root zone. It has to do that so that the grass roots will grow, you know, lower down and they're more sustainable that way. And they go, oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, that's 5 minutes. 5 minutes doesn't do a thing.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times people tell me I water 5 minutes every day.
Yeah.
And that's, if you do that sprinkler audit like I told you and see how little water you're applying in those 5 minutes, you'll understand
nothing
why the roots are not deep and the lawn dries out so quickly. The lawn's going to tell you if it's drying out. You're going to see that color change. You'll notice if you walk across us, you'll see the footprints. So it's going to tell you. And you know, the other thing is a lot of people don't even know how long they're watering. They never watch their sprinkler system run because it runs so early in the morning, which mm-hmm. is important,
mm-hmm.
But they never see it. And then when they finally turn it on, they see they've got broken sprinklers, they've got water running down the driveway. You know, your equipment and is only as good as the people who operate it. And, you know, in truth, we're getting a lot better technology now. We're getting better sprinklers that apply water more evenly. We're getting controllers that can be hooked up to on-site weather stations or through the internet. We've got ET estimates for how much water your lawn needs based on weather statistics. So if you go to an irrigation store or somebody specializes, a nursery that specializes in irrigation, you're going to see a lot of great things.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And we're on the edge of that on every project we do, and it's amazing.
Uh-huh.
From the old days when you used to pull out the pins and put them in the 20 minute spot and pull out the pin and put it in the Tuesday spot, they don't exist anymore. And now it's
right.
All computers.
They're
now it's all everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the smart controllers, I mean, the technology is going to help us out. So if you've got one of those old sprinkler systems, you really save a lot of money by going out there. And then, you know, eventually you might have a weed problem and, you know, you need to take action with something. And again, that's where I really recommend BioAdvanced has a 5-in-1 weed and feed, which both kills and prevents both broadleaf and grassy weeds and feeds for up to 6 months. So mm-hmm. It really kind of takes the guesswork out of weed and feed products, which, you know, is really the challenge with a lot of these.
Oh, yeah.
Is it the right time? Is it the right time to fertilize? Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
But is it the right time to apply the pre-emergent? Maybe. So, but can you? Is there one window where you can do it all at once? And this product really takes the question out of mm-hmm. when to do it.
And what exactly is that product called? What's the name of it?
It's called BioAdvanced 5-in-1 Weed and Feed.
5-in-1.
Yeah, and actually, I would be glad to get you a sample of that.
Well, I would appreciate it. I'd love to try it.
Yeah, I'll send it to the nursery. Is
yeah,
that
please.
Best way to do it?
Please do, yes.
Okay, and then you can see exactly how it works. And we've got some great tools online at bioadvanced.com that can help you solve problems. But the unique thing about this is it really takes the pressure off of when to apply. You apply it in the fall and the spring. If you don't get it early enough, it's still going to kill the crabgrass. If you put that fall on, you're going to get all the, if you put it on in fall, you're going to get the annual bluegrass. So, yeah, I'd love to hit it. See what you think about it.
Okay, and we're going to head into a break and hang in there, and we'll be back to you, okay?
Okay, great.
Alrighty, more of Mike Linder's Lawn and Garden Show with special guests this afternoon. Coming up in a couple of minutes on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hello, this is the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show, and I have a special guest today, Lance Walheim, and we've been talking about lawns, and much of what he has said, you've probably heard me say 100 times over the last, well, maybe 1,000 times, but Lance, thank you for being on my show, and please continue, and I want to know what part of the country you're from, and what your climate is like, too. I think that would be essential.
Yeah, well, I am actually in Central California. I live on a 17-acre citrus ranch. We grow specialty citrus. We grow blood oranges, Meyer lemons, all different types of mandarins and some oddball stuff you haven't seen. But I have family up in the Portland area, and we're up there quite a bit. Just as a little background, I am a horticulturalist. I started out in with a degree in botany from University of California, and then I got lucky when I got out of school and started writing about gardening. And I've written some of the dummies books, Lawn Care for Dummies, Roses for Dummies.
I've read them.
Good.
You bet.
I worked at Sunset Magazine on staff for a number of years and continued after that and worked freelance, and I've been the senior editor of the Sunset Western Garden Book for the last 4 editions. So gardening has been very, very good to me.
Well, that's, you know, and I have several copies of the Sunset Western Garden Book, and they're pretty much worn out. And the last one I bought, I think, was about 10 years ago. But I use them incessantly. Well, great information.
That's what I love to see is when you see somebody who has one that's all worn out. And
the covers come off and the pages fall out. You know, I got to stick them back in.
That's what I love to see.
Oh, gosh. So what's your soil like down in your area?
We have sandy loam where we are. We do have a hard pan in areas, which can be very difficult. But, you know, I have in my own garden, I have raised beds, which are just loaded with tomatoes and things like that. We're obviously a little bit ahead of you up in the Portland area, but I've been spending a lot of time with my daughter and son-in-law up there and just getting them ready to garden. So it's been a lot of fun. They've got a raised bed gardens, and they're just enjoying the heck out of getting all the fresh vegetables and everything else.
Yeah, we're actually 175 miles south of Portland in Roseburg. In Douglas County.
Yeah.
And I have a ranch out in the boondocks, and I also have raised gardens. And, you know, I've been eating strawberries for a month, and it's great. It's fun. And I also, my nursery is an 8-acre nursery, and my topsoil is 20 feet deep.
I would love to have that.
Well, you ought to stop in sometime and visit with me, and I'll give you the tour.
Next time I'm up there, I will, because we occasionally will drive up that way.
Okay.
From California, and I would love to see your nursery. It's usually the first thing I do when I come into a town is look for the local nursery, so
yeah,
I can.
Well, I'm south of Roseburg, and outside of a town called Winston. And if you when you get near Roseburg, within 15 miles, it'll say there's an exit that says Winston, and take that, and you can't miss my place. And has big, large green roofs, and it's called Wintergreen Nursery, and we've been in business now 44 years, so
I looked at your website. That's fantastic.
Good.
Boy, you've
good.
Seen it all, haven't you?
I've tried. I've tried. Oh, golly. Yeah, you know, some of our Douglas County natural soil, not in the floodplains, but out there in the yards that people build their houses on, predominantly a heavy clay. And so consequently, when we're installing lawns and that kind of thing, after we've tilled the clay to where you could actually stick your hands in it, we add soil amendments and old fine grind bark mulch and a few of those other ingredients, and then we retill it to a depth of about 6 inches, so that if we put in, you usually put in sod lawn, and that way that root penetration can get down there. It doesn't go down to the hard clay and just kind of stop. And it's and that's another big problem we have around here. First time lawn installers, they want to do it themselves, and they kind of till it and put seed on it or even sod. And a couple months goes by, and the grass is turning brown, and they're either overwatering or underwatering, and the root penetration is nil, simply because it just can't penetrate the hard pan. So,
right,
soil prep,
to get that soil right, and so that's why it's so important to do exactly what you say is work in that organic matter, and you know you're going to have a better long lawn run.
Oh yeah. Definitely. Better water retention, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
So what's your... I forgot where you were. And
I live in Central California, and we are, we're getting ready. The forecast for tomorrow and the next couple of days is going to be 111.
Oh, geez.
Which is going to be...
It's
probably going to break the records around here, but we are in a very hot climate, dry summers, and but we also are, I'm basically in the prime citrus belt of California now.
What's the nearest town?
Visalia.
Okay.
Which is, is kind of in between Bakersfield and Fresno, but we're right up against the Sequoia. The Sierra Nevada, and just below Sequoia National Park. So
I know exactly where you are.
Yeah, on Highway 198, off of Highway 198.
Yeah, that's pretty country.
It's beautiful country, but boy, I'll tell you, when it gets hot like this, it's rough. It's hard to water, I'll tell you. It's hard to keep everything wet.
Oh, yeah, I understand that. Well, we've been in a drought situation now for 3 years, and we've had a little bit less rain each year, and this year has been like the epitome of how little rain we've gotten. And our rivers right now, we have the North Umpqua River, we have the South Umpqua River on either side of the Roseburg area, and they look like, it looks like it should be August instead of June because of the water level and the rocks that are showing and all that. And it's just it's a crying shame because we have a lot of natural Douglas fir, Oregon white oak, California black oak, that kind of thing. They're all under stress, and it's a shame to see that. And even though we had the last week of rain, it rained, a tenth of an inch every day, kind of, that doesn't do it then.
We've only had about 3 to 4 inches of the whole year, and that was a long time ago, and we're under the same pressure. The creeks that usually run in winter haven't run, and from a farmer's standpoint, we don't get any of our district water, and we're worried about our wells. I mean, in the last 5 years, we had one decent year of rainfall. Otherwise, it's been below average, and it's going to be a tough summer. There's no doubt about that.
Yep.
I'm very concerned about where our wells are going to be. And, the small farmer is the guy that gets hit the hardest because he doesn't have the money to dig the wells deeper and stuff. So we just got to make the best we can. But there's going to be a lot of people who are going to just have to let the trees go dry.
That's right. And I pay attention to our water level every day. I'm blessed in that my well's 19 feet deep at the nursery.
Holy smokes.
And
that's good.
And it works really well, but we still ration, like in our canned area and the retail area, we ration and we make sure that we're not wasting, you're wasting some, of course, but and then my field crops, I only... I water them maybe every 7 to 10 days and for maybe an hour just to make sure that they stay alive. I've got Japanese maple and Nordham fir and different other types of maples that are growing. And so far they look okay, but and the Japanese maple is actually a very tough tree, so they can survive, dry conditions. But still, it's you want them to grow a little bit at the same time.
Right. It's funny because we even, in this hot climate here, we grow Japanese maples, and I've found that the seedling trees are extremely tough.
Yeah.
And they can, we'll get a little bit of scorched leaves at the end of the summer, but, you know, you just can't find a better behaved tree. I've got several different species of maples in my backyard, and I just love them.
Oh, yeah. At my home place, I've got probably 20 varieties. I've got 120 acres of timberland, basically, and about 15 miles from Roseburg. And I just kind of plant, I said, well, that's a nice Japanese maple. I'll bring one home, plant it. And so we've got about 20 different varieties around, lots of different color. You ever hear of one called Eskimo Sunset?
No, I haven't.
Well, it has green, pink, and light green all in the same leaf. Very fantastic tree. Very rare tree.
Wow.
And I tapped into that years and years ago by a guy by the name of J.D. Vertrees, who wrote the book on Japanese maples.
Oh, I know. I know that book very well.
Yeah. So he was my friend. Master. He was my mentor.
Yeah.
Taught me how to graft Japanese maples.
Oh, really? So is that one in that? Is there a picture of it in the book? Because I've got that.
It might be. It might be. Depends on what year your book was published.
Oh, mine's probably old.
Yeah.
So.
But if you're up here, you know, like I say, if you stop, I'll show you one. You give me some fertilizer, I'll give you an Eskimo Sunset. How's that?
Okay, that sounds like a good deal.
Okay, it is.
That sounds like a great deal.
Oh, golly. So do you, now on your citrus crops, we have Meyer lemons. You mentioned Meyer lemons. We have them, but they're more of a patio plant. Got to bring them in the winter. But boy, they sure bear a lot of lemons during the season.
They are one of the most generous trees there are, and they're perfect for growing in containers because they have a smaller size, and they start producing when they're 2 years old usually. And
the branches can't even support the weight of the lemon, for crying out loud.
I know, it's fantastic. The funny thing about it, at one time I thought I had the largest planting of Meyer lemons in the state of California. I had about 800 trees.
Wow.
This was 20 years ago when, they were just starting to get popular with the chefs and things. And now, there's 150 acres here and 150 acres there. And, it's just a great plant. I mean, I can't think of an easier citrus to grow, especially in containers. As long as you're getting that, the right fertilizer on them and getting some of those micronutrients in there and doing it regularly, there's nothing that could be better.
Excuse me, we got to take another break and we'll be back with you. Don't leave, okay?
Okay.
All righty. We will be right back with more of Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show here on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hello, we are back for another 15-20 minutes of the Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show, and I have a special guest that's speaking to me from California, Lance Walheim, and Lance has said everything that he said so far. I agree with him, so he must be a really smart guy. Are you really smart, Lance?
Oh, that's what they tell me. I don't know. Don't ask my wife.
Yeah, mine neither. Hey, let me tell you a story about the Meyer lemons. I went to a client's place here several years back and to do some renovative work, and he says, "Hey, Mike, I bought a Meyer lemon from you about 8 years ago, and do you want to see it?" And I said, "Yeah, how's it doing?" Well, he actually planted it outside, and he built a greenhouse, a small, probably 8 by 10 structure around it with removable plexiglass windows. And he took the windows off in the spring, summer, and fall. And then when it started to get cold, he put the windows back on and had a light bulb in there. And it was about 8 feet tall, and it almost filled this 10 by 10 little portable greenhouse, I guess. And he says, I get a pickup load of lemons off this thing every year. It was the most gorgeous, outrageous Meyer lemon I've ever seen in Douglas County, because they just don't grow outdoors here. So
that's fantastic.
It was really cool.
One of the first books that I wrote was on citrus. It's always been a love of mine. And in the first book, we had a we did this thing where we started the Indoor Citrus and Rare Fruit Society, which is not around anymore, but we interviewed people all around the country, primarily from contacts that we got from Four Winds Nursery, and about how they grew the citrus indoors. And it was just shocking how many people are successful doing it. And most of them were growing the Meyer lemons, although we did see kumquats and Bears limes and things like that. But, you know, we're talking trees that, you know, 30 years old. A lot of them, of course, are in greenhouses or in sunrooms, because that's, you know, that's what you really need in a cold climate. You got to keep that humidity up, and otherwise you're going to get a lot of leaf drop, and you might anyways, but, you know, shortly after they drop all their leaves, they're probably going to bloom again, and if you get everything, you know, set up right, you know, they're just a tough plant.
And it's an amazing amount of fruit that grows on this thing.
It's just a single Meyer lemon tree can give you, you know, hundreds of pounds of fruit every year.
Yes. and the blossom is very, very sweet.
And fragrant, right.
Very
exactly.
Fragrant,
and
yes.
It's a great looking plant. I mean, we live in an area, like I said, that is now the prime citrus area for California. And when you drive, as you know, up Highway 198, it's a little cooler in the center of the valley, so you go through all the deciduous fruits, the walnuts and the pecans, and then all of a sudden it changes to citrus, and all the trees are sitting with the oranges on, and people just stop right there at that roadside area to take their pictures of all the oranges, because so few people have actually been in citrus country.
Right. Yeah, they're thinking of down in the San Diego or LA or Pasadena or something like that, and then they're surprised when they see it up in north.
Yeah, and of course, you know, it's the reason is obvious, that the land is just too valuable down there, and the water is getting scarcer and scarcer, and the citrus industry moved up in this area in the 40s and the 50s, and now we just, you know, we have hundreds of thousands of acres, and it's a nice place to live because we're so close to the mountains, so we can see the mountains up to 12.5 from here, and we've, you know, the weather has changed so much. I've been on this property for over 30 years, and when we first moved here, we would have to provide cold protection anywhere from 15 to 20 nights a year. You know, that means running water, wind machines, whatever we could do. Now, we haven't had a really cold night at all in the last couple of years. And, you know, it just shows you how things are changing.
Yeah. The weather does change, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Yes, indeed.
Do you grow any other citrus varieties?
I've tried some oranges and some tangerine, but I didn't have the success I've like with the Meyer lemon. The Meyer lemon is a weed; it just grows.
yeah, it is, and it's also, you know, it's hard with the oranges and some of the ones that really have to sweeten up because they just don't get the heat during the winter. But you know, the other ones that I like and I've seen successfully grown are the kumquats, which again are a real nice small tree, very generous bloomers. And then also the Bears lime or the Mexican lime. Bears lime I like better because it's a better looking tree, but they're both compact and they fit perfect in containers. And
yeah, I've had a lime or two in stock and I wasn't. I wasn't focused on them, and apparently we sold them because I don't see them anymore. But I want to get more of the citrus varieties in. But we do cuttings on our Meyer lemons every year, and that's how that's how we propagate them. And my daughter does that.
The other advantage to growing them from cuttings is that, you know, if you do happen to grow them outside or don't get them inside, you know, before it gets cold, they're going to sprout from the roots and be true to type. So, you know, that's a good way to do it.
Yeah. Well, we grow them in a heated greenhouse, and I have circulated hot water in PVC pipes on the bottom of my beds, and I keep that about 68 degrees, between 68 and 70 degrees all winter. and it's powered by I've got a pumping system. This is something I did like 25 years ago. So we I didn't have a lot of money, but we got one of these and we got one of those, and I got an old truck radiator hooked into the circulation system. And if I want to know how warm the water is in the beds, I just stick my finger in the top of the radiator, and it's warm. It's good. I know it's working.
Get out of here! You're kidding me. That's great.
It works. You know, I copied. I saw all these other guys doing this years ago, and I thought I should be able to do this. And I tried with the electrical cables, and I was not successful. I don't know what happened. So I stumbled on this one nursery, an older guy, and he had PVC pipe laying in the bottom of his beds. I said, "What's that?" He said, "Well, that's my cutting beds, and I recirculate hot water in there for bottom heat." And I said, "Gosh, that's cool. I can do that." and I've been doing it for 25 years, and we do anywhere from 5,000 to 7,000 cuttings a year, to feed our nursery and that kind of thing. And my daughter does it all. She does a really, really great job.
Do they all go into pots or they go into the field?
No, they very few of them go into the field. We put them in 4-inch for a while, and once they're really doing well in the 4-inch, we'll put them in a gallon. And then when they root out in the gallons, some things will go in the field. The rest of it goes into retail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And so did you see a big upswing in business during the cold COVID thing?
Oh, gosh, yes. We have been swamped. I'm a landscape contractor as well, and designer, and I've got jobs booked into October at this point, and I haven't been been able to hire anybody for almost a year, and I finally got two guys, so we're beginning to make some progress, and it's been crazy. It's just really crazy.
Yeah, I hear that. I hear that everywhere. Well, it's nice to hear that a lot more younger people are trying to get into it as well, because that's really the future of all of it.
Yeah. Well, one of the guys I hired is one of my grandsons who's looking for work. He had a different job, and he said, "Hey, Grandpa, you need some help?" I said, "You bet. Come on down, boy."
Yeah.
And then another a friend of mine's been helping me part-time, and then his son is now full-time with me. So we're starting to knock out the jobs fairly quickly. Instead of just three of us on the job, there's five of us, six of us, and it works a lot better that way.
So you're out on the job every day too. So you're running a nursery and doing.
Well, my wife and daughter, and I have a florist and a gift shop as well. And so we've got 3-4 people at the nursery, and that I'm chasing down clients, and when they the sprinkler broke at my coffee, and you go over there and solve that problem, and then haul plants to the job or line this up and line that up. And I very seldom do physical work now.
Right.
My most physical thing is getting in my pickup and getting out of my pickup as I go from place to place. And I start usually about 6 in the morning and end at 6 at night. So you got the picture.
Is it 7 days a week too?
No, I take Sunday off. I got it. We can't do it.
Well, it sounds like you might have a book in you somewhere, too.
Well, as a matter of fact, I write a gardening column for a local newspaper, a weekly, and it's I write about what we've been talking about. I write about practical things and what to look for when you're having problems and how to fix that problem. And I've been writing, 10 years on that. And and then I take my first 3 pages of my article, and then I blend it into my radio show and add 3 more pages of notes. So it's been good. And I've been on the radio here since 2003. January or February of 2003. So. And how I got this job was kind of funny. My wife and I were having breakfast at this little cafe in town, and I saw the owner of the radio station, and I says, "Hey, Pat, how come you don't have a gardening show on your radio stations?" He says, "Write me a proposal." I said, "Okay," and we left. And About 2 days later, he called me up and says, "You got my proposal ready yet?" I says, "Yeah, I'll have it there at 3 o'clock." Then I sat at my desk and I thought, how do I write a proposal for a radio show, a garden radio show? But I whipped something out, brought it to him. He says, "Hey, it looks good. What day you want to be on?" that was my foot in the door thing.
Yeah, I got lucky early in my career, too. When I got out of college, I fell in with a guy named Walter Doty, who was one of the editors at Sunset Magazine, but then started a...
Could you hold that? I got the signal from my guy here. We got to go to another commercial break, and then we'll get back to you. Thank you.
Hold on to that thought.
Okay.
All right, we'll be right back. More of Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show following this break on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, welcome back to the Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show, and I have a special guest, Lance Walheim, who has been speaking to me and the audience here for the last 45 minutes, and we've had a good conversation, and I've appreciated the fact that he called me up and said, "Hey, I'd like to be on your show." So he's an author, he's a citrus rancher, he's got lemons and oranges and limes and probably a lot of things. I probably missed something. So what do you say to that, Lance?
Yeah, I do have a lot. I've had a great time. It's been fun talking to you.
Good.
We grow a lot of oddball stuff like yuzus and sudaches, a lot of Asian fruits that are pretty out there.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, like I mentioned before, when I got out of college and went to work for Walter Doty, who was a great researcher and had all the contacts. So the first book I worked on was about trees, and, you know, I got to work with people like Frank Mackinas and Robert Tickner, from all those guys from up in Oregon. I don't know if you know any of those guys, but it's nice to have a little luck.
Oh yeah. And you know something about this industry, and it's true, I learn something new every single day.
And from great people. I mean, it's the friendliest group of people, because people love what they're doing.
Yeah. And you know, the vast audience of homeowners, et cetera, out there, you know, they don't have that knowledge base. And so they come in and they ask you all kinds of questions, and you give them the answers, and they come back in a month or whatever and say, "Hey, what you told me worked, and it's beautiful and it's growing and it's lovely, blah, 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 blah." And they're happy, and then they keep coming back and buying stuff.
that's right. That's great.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
But we've, you asked about from the pandemic, and we had so many people. We had our best spring last year that we've had in a long time. It was just a constant flow of people putting in their own vegetable gardens and doing yard work and landscaping, because they had to do something. They were not working at their regular job, so they were redoing their yards. And we were busy, busy,
space.
Busy.
Yeah, that outdoor space became more and more important.
It is.
And then they learned the joys of it, you know,
yes.
The joys of growing your own vegetables and having your nice outdoor space and getting the kids involved. And so.
I try to tell them how to create that special place in your backyard. When you're out there fighting the world, you got a place. When you come home, you got a place where you can be quiet. It's beautiful. There's a water feature. There are some beautiful shrubs and beautiful trees, and you sit there and it's quiet, and you can just revitalize your entire head and relax for, you know, an hour or two before you have to do anything else. And it's good health practice.
It certainly is. Yeah. It's good for your mental health and your physical health.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So what do you do for fun?
What do I do for fun? I garden. That's one thing I do. You know, I like to do some traveling. My wife and I just celebrated our 40th wedding anniversary, and we went to northern Arizona. I went to the Grand Canyon and Sedona and Flagstaff, which fantastic.
Yes.
I mean, we just had a fantastic time. We got lucky at the Grand Canyon. We got there real early in the morning, and the crowds weren't there, and the light was just gorgeous. So, and it was clear as a bell. So I love to travel. And, you know, we do a little bit of sports, but we're getting up in those ages where, you know, it seems like we got more aches and pains than ever.
But, I notice I'm moving a little bit slower than I did when I was 25.
Yeah, really. Yeah, me too. So we've got just finally our kids are having some grandkids. So we spend a lot of time with them. We're going back east. Yeah, so. But, you know, during the day-to-day basis, you know, I haven't been working a lot as much as I used to, but I get to spend more time in the garden, and we've really, you know, intensified our vegetable growing. And, you know, like I said, I got raised beds. I like to do a lot of vertical gardening with trellises and stuff. And
well, my hobby is bonsai. I've been doing bonsai for about 40 years. And one of my mountain hemlocks that I got from the upper elevations in the Cascades is about 140 years old.
You are kidding.
No, I'm not kidding.
Wow, I'd love to
so
see
cool.
that. See, I think our next trip is going to be up your way. I got a lot to see. I'd love to see the nursery.
Oh, I like taking to my house, show you my house, too. Hey, we got 1 minute or less, and I really thank you for coming on, and it's been a pleasure talking to you. And anytime you want to come back, let me know. And if you're up here in the area, give me a call, and I'll give you a quick tour. How's that?
Hey, thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. It's been a good time.
Good time for me, too. Bye-bye.
All righty. What do you got planned for next week, Mike?
I think I might have Captain Kangaroo or Tarzan on here. I'm not sure.
I'll be definitely looking
I loved what he had to say. He and I are on the same page on so many issues, and it's... I just haven't written the books he's written. Jeez Louise.
Sounds like you guys are going to get together soon.
I hope so. I'd like to meet him. I'd like to meet him.
All right. Well, it's...
Time to go?
It's time to go. See you next week.
Well, thanks for listening.